F1, number 17B.
They shall be devoured and finished, they shall be cut down, and as though that their name is no more sown there, and they be cut off the graven image, and I will make thy grave, for thou art vile. To show that Saul refutes that argument which always comes up from Nineveh, which says, I'm a big empire, I'm a beautiful city, I'm a strong city, I'm the world's best city, and the Lord Almighty can't do a thing against it. So the prophet will show that Saul is going to work on that situation, and work on that situation will bring it down. And then on the other side, he will have a positive sense in him. First, you see, in that sense, in Saul, we also often have those two strains, namely that the wheat is gathered into the barns and that the tares are burned up. So here we had the tares of Nineveh being burned up. Then he addresses himself to Judah, and so Judah prophesies the liberation of Jerusalem from Nineveh's bondage. He says, I will afflict thee no more. I will break Nineveh's yoke from off thee, and will burn thy bonds in sunder. You see that freedom of soul which will come in. Behold upon the mountains the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace. O Judah, keep thy solemn feast, perform thy vows, for the wicked shall no more pass through thee, he is utterly cut off. So he begins to see that how we can handle that claim of error, where error says, I am sin, and I'm against the Lord, and nothing can pull me down. At that moment, he says, the only thing you can do is to rejoice, to keep your solemn feast, to keep your spiritual sense, and to rejoice in that spiritual sense, and to wait until sin is being destroyed. So we come to the fourth argument. If we want to recapitulate, error says, as the first argument, I am a law by myself, nothing can touch me. Error's law is untouchable, there is no might that can touch me and bring me down. So he has to say no. Mine is always the law to everything, and will break down every unlawfulness. Then error comes as a second argument, as the counterfeit of spirit, and error says, you know, only evil will survive. The good will always be destroyed. And so he has to handle that and see, no, spirit knows quite distinctly what is evil and what is good, and will not misunderstand that, and will not mingle that, and so will always bring doom on evil, and will save those who trust in the Lord. And then in soul, the argument of error is that error is a sin, and that sin is so intricate and so subtle. So subtle, you see, that it can't do anything, that we can't do anything against it. And then he shows how Nineveh, who is depicted there in all its subtlety, will be brought down by soul, which rests on spiritual sense, on soul sense, on rejoicing over the spiritual facts, and that brings the solution. And then he goes to the fourth subject, where he shows that principle is the only true foundation, that the foundational sense of principle really can shatter the foundations of all evil. He now here has to meet that argument of evil, which evil says, I operate according to a system, just as physical science or any other science says, I operate according to a system, and system is my strength. See, physics would have no strength if it hadn't been seen as a system and as a science. No science which we have today would really be practical and would be a strength if it hadn't been seen as a system. Because whenever we found the true foundation of something, we have found the strength of that subject. And so error says, I also have a system. I also have a system, and with that I have enough strength to protect all the errors, to keep up all the errors. And that's what he wants to show here. He shows that enormous empire of Assyria, which reached over the whole Middle East, which really reached over the whole ancient world, which had 22 kings subject to him, that if they could break down the foundation of that kingdom, namely Nineveh, and not the whole of Assyria, if they could break down the fortifications of Nineveh, they would break down the whole empire. Just as to show that if we ourselves lose the fundamental sense of Christian Science, then we are attackable from every side. Then what we know is not foolproof. Then it is not the protection anymore to us. Then there are too many loopholes in it. And so he shows that if we want to tackle error, we really must tackle its belief in a foundation, in a system. And a system in that time was always symbolized through fortifications, and the various fortifications, the ramparts and the doors and the water around the ramparts. You see, about the towers in the ramparts, how they are manned and so on. That always gives the sense of system. Just as Ezekiel, then, when he shows the system of men, he describes it through that Jerusalem with its doors and with its gangways and with its towers and with the length and so on and so on, you see. So in those times, you see, it's quite natural. They just could see, we don't have to kill every Assyrian to get rid of the Assyrians. We just have to break down that stronghold, that system which they have built up around the centers, the fortifications. If we can break that, the whole thing just goes flop. That's what he wants to show here. He shows here how Nineveh thought that her strength is in that fortification, and he says quite ironically to Nineveh, he says, all right, you keep the ammunition, you watch the way, you make thy loins strong, you fortify thy power mightily, it won't help you. Then he shows how the army of the Babylonians, the army of the enemy, really comes up against that. And by breaking down their fortification, he shows that the whole empire falls into pieces. The Century Bible says this at this point. The prophet depicts in rapid succession the approach of the assailants, the preparation for the attack, the charging of the chariots, the opening of the gates, the flight of the population, the treasures plundered by the captors, the city which had hitherto been the home of fearless and ferocious warriors, deserted and silent. Nahum's words are these. I read from the Aramaic. They say it's one of the most beautiful descriptions in the Old Testament, showing how now the Nineveh is attacked, and how it is attacked so that it falls. The shields of their mighty men are red. The valiant men parade with flaming torches and in chariots in the day of their preparation, and the horsemen are terrifying. In the streets they sing praises and glory in their chariots. Their appearance is like torches. Now they run like lightning. The soldiers are obedient to their officers. They stumble, but they march. They make haste to the wall, and the battlements are prepared to take the wall. The city gates are opened, and the palaces tremble. And then he shows how they get in into the city, how Nineveh says to everyone of the Ninevites, "Stand, stand," shall they cry, but none shall look back. No more any use. And then, behold, I am against thee, saith the Lord of hosts, and the voice of thy messengers shall no more be heard. See, I haven't read all of it, but he shows that the moment they could tackle the ramparts and could open the doors, that inside everything fell into peace. They fled, the queen fled, and so on, and the soldiers fled, and everyone fled, and then he could see, behold, I am against thee, that's the Lord of hosts. And the voice of thy messengers, of thy phenomena of evil, all those messengers which went out to the empire, those governors and so on which ruled the empire, they all, the voice of thy messengers shall no more be heard. See, the moment he shows that if we can tackle the noumenon of an evil, the phenomena of evil just flees. Well done, this. So he gives here, in his language, a sense of the foundational sense of principle, and debunks that sense that error too can have a foundational sense, which is a stronghold for all the phenomena of evil. That, you see, so true. We started with Hosea, and we just could see that all really we have to handle is the belief that we can be backsliding from God. That every backsliding from God is a fundamental, is a noumenon of evil. And if we can handle that, we can handle with that the whole hosts of messengers of evil. The moment we don't backslide, so which way, say from mind, you see, and we stay with the divine mind, then we handle the noumenon that we can go out from mortal mind. But going out from mortal mind brings a whole host, a whole army of messengers of mortal mind claims. A whole army. Because mortal mind claims not just one thing, it claims a lot of things. It claims that mortal mind is intelligent, that mortal mind is a creator, that mortal mind has its law, that mortal mind has power, that mortal mind can control us, that mortal mind has an influence of us, and so on. It just can go on and on. The whole messenger, the whole empire of Assyria is then wakened up. But that very one thing, if we check the backsliding from divine mind to mortal mind, that if we prevent that, then we fortify our system, we fortify the principle of mind, we fortify the principle of mind, and with that we are no more in danger of all those messengers of mortal mind. See the beauty of a principle and of a science. Well, he goes on then to life. And he just shows there then that once the foundation of evil is broken down, that it can have no more life. That evil can have only life as long as we don't have broken down the system of evil, the claim that evil has a system and has foundation. And so he shows how Nineveh is completely slain. He speaks then all on the tone of the counterfeit of life. Woe to the bloody city, you see. The moment we hear that tone of bloody city, of blood, the counterfeit of life. There is a multitude of slain and a great number of carcasses. There is no end to their corpses. They stumble upon their corpses. Yeah, we can't help hearing the tone of death, you see. That when we break the backbone of evil, that with that we bring death to error. And so the wildness of Nineveh is laid bare. He ends there and says, Nineveh is laid waste. Who will mourn her? When shall I seek comforters for thee? Then the claim comes, you see, the claim comes now for error, which says, all right, I see, I'm going down. See, at the point of life, error says, all right, I thought I could boast with life, as the kings and the princes of Assyria did. They were like, says, they were like young lions, just playing about with all their praise they had. He said, all right, if I go down, then comes the sixth claim of Aaron, says, but there will be a savior for me. See, when Aaron goes down, he doesn't give up at once. That's only the point of life. Then Aaron says, all right, there will be a savior. Somehow I will save myself. Somehow Aaron always tries to save himself. So he asks, when shall I seek a comforter for thee? Nahum says, you think, Aaron, you really have a comforter, a savior? And so he takes another symbol of truth, showing how the saving truth leaves no savior for error. He now wants to show that however big error is, that it has no savior in itself. That it can boast and be boastful, but it has no error, no savior. And so he takes another illustration, namely that illustration from that very important and powerful capital of Upper Egypt. At the time, Upper Egypt was the center of the Egyptian Empire, comprising Ethiopia and the Upper Nile and the Lower Nile and Libya and all these countries, the country of Put and so on around it, was quite a strong nation. And the center of it was a town called, in one Bible, just called Populus No. In other Bible, it's called No Ammon. It means the same. And so he speaks and says, do you remember, he says to Nineveh, do you remember No Ammon, that mighty city in the middle of the upper Rhine, surrounded by the river, surrounded by water? The waters of the Nile were their fortification. They had big walls. They had the allegiance of all the surrounding countries of the country of Put and of the country of Libyan, and yet it couldn't withstand the attack of the Babylonians at that time. Yet she went into captivity. And so it tells her, you know, if Ammon couldn't withstand the attack of the right of the Christ idea, then Nineveh, you have no chance whatever to think something will save you. So Nineveh also shall be captured like No Ammon. Thy stronghold can be shaken, your people shall be cowards. The fire shall devour thee, the sword shall cut thee off. The numberless merchants, the civil merchants, the warriors, and are like locusts. He says, all your messengers, they will be like locusts. Because when the sun is rising, when the sun rises, they flee away, and their place is not known where they are. That's the symbol he gives here. See, he asks at the beginning, you think there is a comforter for you? Because that's the argument of error. And it says, well, there is always a way out. And so it tries another trick to get out. But Nahum comes, as you know, fundamentally, there is no way out for you. Just look at No Ammon. There was no way out for No Ammon too. And finally, he tells them, all your messenger, all the phenomena of evil, all those messengers, those civil servants, those warriors, those merchants, which were spreading all over the empire, and were ruling the empire, and so on, they flee like locusts when the sun arises, and nobody knows where they have gone. They are no more. And then comes the last touch to it, love, where he shows that in the completeness of love, error is vanished once and for all. Now the last, you see, the last argument error always has, in every case, when error is done with, it rises up its head again and says, yes, but I will come again later. I will come again later. When we have done with a disease or so, thought comes up and the argument comes up, I could have it again. It could happen again. You see, that's the last weapon error has when it is knocked down to pieces, that it says, all right, I lost the game, but I will come again. I will come again. I will raise up my head again. You see, so that argument has to be met too, and it is met naturally with love, because love says, I'm complete and once and for all and universal. So here he shows that love really works out such a complete and final recovery over error that error can no more return and start all over again. That recurrence, that reappearing of error, you see, that what you call when something comes back, a sickness comes, a relapse, you see, a relapse. All these arguments, you see, are dealt with now. They have to be dealt with in our consciousness. Because it's no good if we handle a claim and it disappears, and it disappears, if that silent argument which is in the world, it may not even be in our consciousness, but which is, say, in the consciousness of medical theory, or which is a claim in the world that it says, yes, but that thing has always a relapse, it can always come back again. So it handles that sense of relapse and shows that Nineveh is completely scattered. He shows in only two verses a very wonderful sense of all the world order. He says, thy shepherds slumber, O king of Assyria. They slumber. Mind, you see. Thy nobles shall dwell in dust. Spirit. Thy people is scattered upon the mountains, and no man gathers them. There is no more soul sense there. That gathers the idea. There is no healing of thy bruise, principle. It says there is no healing for error. Error cannot be reestablished. Then thy wound is grievous, is incurable. Right. It's always, error always will be brought to death. All that hear the bruit of thee shall clap the hands over thee. The hands of the Christ dominion. And then love, for upon whom has not thy wickedness passed continually. It is, as Mr. Jedi says, when you have once conquered a disease condition of the body through mind, that condition never recurs. That condition never recurs. That's what he shows through mind, spirit, soul, life here. And you have won a point in science. And he says you can clap your hands over it and be happy because that weakness is passed away. That's how he ends the story.